Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report called the ESIAC Report when we come back. Hey, if you're earning about $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep about 40% of what you create and produce. The government gets 60%. That's about $20,000 for you, $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just real special? And if you think that your share isn't enough for you, then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes just like you did this year, and you'll net about 25%. And the government will net 75%. Which means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net $4,000 more dollars, or 8% more net take-home pay than you did this year. So you produce twice as much and get 8% of it. Well, now that's real fair, isn't it? That's why I contend that there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only net 25% of it. So why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD package and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information, and it will answer many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that you pay so much and receive so little in return. Now, to order your free General Law CD package, all you have to do is call us. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and then send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. The ESIAC report. So, you've been diagnosed with cancer. Cancer. It's probably the most dreaded diagnosis that anyone can receive. Just the word cancer is enough to conjure up images of hopeless, unremitting suffering, an unimaginably painful one-way trip to the great unknown. It's a trip forced upon us long before we're ready to embark on our final journey, and we'll be leaving our loved ones. We're marked. We're doomed. We're forsaken. We're finished. It's cancer. A single word is uttered and your life seemingly comes to an end. It's really quite astonishing what one word can do to our perception of reality. But what is the reality of cancer anyway? And what does the word actually mean? Is it necessarily synonymous with death? And do the collective beliefs held by the medical establishment concerning cancer and its proper treatment serve to empower the patient, or does it serve to empower the disease? If you have any experience at all with the traditional medicine of America, you already know that cancer is considered by most medical professionals as a big deal. It is a serious condition, indeed, major condition. Indeed, it's a killer condition. And so it follows that such a serious life-threatening condition, such as cancer, takes an equally serious response in order to save the afflicted patient. After all, something foreign, something evil, something unknown has invaded the bodies of the patient's body, and it's rapidly mutating, it's growing, it's ruthlessly devouring the patient's very existence. So in order to stop this insidious killer, traditional medical science has developed some lethal weapons: surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy. These are the first weapons of choice by most oncologists. But it's a curious form of warfare, to say the least. Everybody seems to agree that the enemy, cancer, is incredibly powerful, always lurking, and can attack anyone suddenly in many, many insidious ways. And yet, very little is done to prevent the attack. In fact, we do the exact opposite. We supply the enemy with endless streams of advanced weaponry, such as insecticides, carcinogenic chemicals, tobacco, and radiation, just to name a few. And to make matters infinitely worse, we usually neglect our own defense forces, that's our immune system, and then we are utterly shocked when the enemy attacks and gets the upper hand. There's very little, if any, concern about how the enemy was able to invade in the first place. Were the lookouts asleep? Was there no warning of an impending attack? Where are the weak points that allowed the invader to get the upper hand? And more importantly, there's almost no attention given to helping the body's already battle-hardened, albeit neglected, standing army, which is called our immune system, to repel that attacker from within. In fact, when the counterattack begins, it's mounted with such ferocity from outside of the body, what the body's own defense forces mistake, and then the intended attack against cancer is in fact an attack against the entire body, which in fact it is. The immune system has no other alternative than to valiantly fight back, weakening your immune system even further. Now, at the present time, the medical establishment, although they may argue to the contrary, has no proven smart bombs when it comes to killing cancer. It's usually attempted with something resembling saturation bombing. And we all know what happens to innocent bystanders when you carpet bomb an entire city to kill a handful of gorillas. A lot of innocent people die. Well, chemotherapy and radiation are, for the most part, indiscriminate killers. They can definitely kill cancer cells. There's no doubt about it. Chemotherapy and radiation kill cancer cells. But at what cost? Now, surgery can be a bit more precise, but again, at what cost to the integrity of the whole organism? It is precisely the type of warfare the medical establishment has waged that has led some skeptics to conclude that the cure in most cases concerning cancer is no better, and sometimes it's far worse than the actual disease itself. We are not winning the war on cancer, say the critics. That's not to say that there have been no victories. There have. But the war that has been enthusiastically waged against cancer for many decades now is making very little headway, if any at all, and we may in fact be in worse condition than we were on December 23, 1971, when President Nixon signed the National Cancer Act declaring all-out war against cancer. The cure was promised by the bicentennial, that is, 1976, and 23 years, billions of dollars and millions of deaths later, no cure is in sight. So are we losing the war? The critics refer to some alarming statistics to make their point. Ralph W. Moss, the author of The Cancer Industry, and Dr. Samuel Epstein, professor of occupational environmental medicine at the University of Illinois, had this to say, quote, "Cancer now strikes one in three and kills one in four Americans. 500,000 last year alone." Now, since 1950, The overall incidence rates have increased by 40%. Cancers of the breast and of the prostate and colon in men have escalated 60%. Cancer in children, 30%. Less common cancers have increased more than 100%. Our ability to cure most advanced cancers scarcely has improved since 1971. For example, the 5-year survival rate for non-localized breast cancer remains a static 18%. So what about the emerging cures that we've been promised, such as Taxol or genetic engineering? Remember the cancer vaccine that was promised? Remember interferon, miracle cure of the 70s? In truth, very few scientists believe their work will result in cures anytime soon, but such hype secures next year's funding for hungry bureaucrats and researchers. It is, in short, a WPA program for PhDs. Unquote. Now, to be sure, the generals leading the war against cancer have become a lot richer, and their armies have grown. Their arsenals have increased exponentially. Their authority and power to wage war in whatever manner they see fit remains unquestioned. So powerful is the medical establishment today that they appear to shun anyone who has a novel approach or new weapon which might turn the tide, unless it meets their strict criteria as a credible weapon. Whatever credible means. But their criteria is so steeped in bureaucracy and the costs are so prohibitive that only the powerful chemical, pharmaceutical, and biotechnology companies are able to play in this game. Some of the most severe critics put forth the notion that the medical establishment is involved in a grand conspiracy to make megabucks off of millions of unsuspecting cancer victims. And it is their firm belief that the medical establishment reaps such enormous profits from the treatment of cancer that they have no intention of eventually finding a cure, past, present, or future. After all, argue the critics, if a cure were found, lucrative research grants would disappear, and billions of dollars of revenue generated from surgery and other forms of traditional treatments would simply dry up. And they bolster their position by showing the closely interlocking professional and financial interests between the principal components of the medical establishment, supposedly leading this war against cancer. Namely, the NCI, that's the National Cancer Institute, the American Cancer Society, known as the ACS, and the 20-odd comprehensive cancer centers, such as New York's Memorial Sloan Kettering and Boston's Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, and the extensive network of the NCI and the ACS contractees and grantees at most major universities, and the leading pharmaceutical companies and the Food and Drug Administration, also called the FDA, which regulates the marketplace on behalf of these very industries that it is supposed to oversee. And seen in the shadow of huge profits, the medical establishment does appear to lend credence to those who would argue in favor of a grand conspiracy to bilk the public. However, it's even more complex than that. To lump tens of thousands of professionals currently engaged in the research and treatment of cancer into one large group of conniving profit mongers, greedily taking advantage of cancer victims, is, to say the least, unfair. Without a doubt, many medical professionals have dedicated their lives to eradicating this devastating disease. But given their very real dedication and commitment to eradicating cancer, and the enormous amount of money spent to advance their commitment, why is it then that there is so little progress over such an expanse of time, mainly 100 years? Now, the numbers don't lie. Could it be that the answer to the cancer riddle lies somewhere else, beyond our venerated research centers, somewhere beyond our top hospitals, somewhere out beyond our love affair with modern technology and science? Could it be that the answer has been with us all along, humbly waiting, abundant in the mystery, magic, and true curative powers of nature, rather than science? So this report is about the dramatic history and development of a very different kind of treatment for cancer. It's called ESSIAC, E-S-S-I-A-C. It's a treatment at once simple, inexpensive, highly effective, totally natural. It's a treatment with virtually no side effects, and it's available to everyone. It's a treatment that has restored health to thousands of cancer victims, most of them pronounced as hopeless, terminal, by their own physicians. So as you read this report, it is important that you not look to the obvious, and you will certainly see evidence of what seems like the medical establishment's effort to suppress the use of ESSIAC as a credible cancer treatment. Critics of the medical establishment will be inclined to conclude that the history of ESSIAC is yet more proof of a grand conspiracy. But if you look deeper, I think you'll see that the story of ESSIAC is really the story of the perennial conflict between the makers and defenders of what they believe is reality, and the courageous human beings who hold to a different perspective. It is a story as old as the history of mankind itself. From the trials of Socrates and Galileo to the Salem witch hunts, and on to the present assault by the Food and Drug Administration against natural therapies, anyone who has ever truly challenged the current collective belief system puts themselves in great jeopardy, despite the fact that in many cases, history ultimately lands firmly on their side. This conflict will always exist, not because the establishment is inherently evil by nature, but rather because authority, by its very nature, exists solely to defend the status quo. And most people, and especially the authorities, do not like wake-up calls. Destroying illusions is a very dangerous process. Now, the people who run the medical establishment are no different from other people holding positions of authority. On the one hand, they must protect society from what they believe is a threat to its well-being. In their case, they call it quackery. On the other hand, they must defend their own precious collective belief system referred to as modern medicine. So here now is the story of ESSIAC. It's the story of an ancient herbal remedy and of the remarkable human beings who have used it for hundreds of years and to great benefit, and thus defied, and they still do defy to this day, cancer's establishment and its course of events. And we hope their victories will be an inspiration to you in your own self-evident, open-minded search for truth. Now, much has already been written about ESSIAC, some of it confusing and some of it contradictory. Its history in Canada as an incredibly effective natural treatment for Canada for cancer has been well reported in numerous magazines and newspapers for the past 65 years. There have been books published and radio and TV programs produced. Even a video is being sold which purports to reveal ESSIAC's original formula and how to prepare it. However, although ESSIAC may be well known in Canada, very few people in the United States have ever heard the word ESSIAC. There's been a conspiracy of silence, as many people have charged, perpetrated by the American medical establishment to keep information about ESSIAC out of your hands and out of your mind. Maybe and maybe not. So far, our presses haven't been shut down, nor have any copies of the ESSIAC report been confiscated, and we doubt that that's going to happen anytime soon. However, after reading this report, some of you may disagree. is SEAC a cure for cancer? Well, we can say this. All you're about to read is true to the best of our knowledge and belief, and we've carefully researched all of the information available about SEAC, virtually everything that's ever been printed, and we've conducted numerous interviews with people who have treated themselves with SEAC and claim to have recovered from terminal cancer. And we've tried to the best of our ability to separate truth from fiction, fact from fantasy, and we've concluded every possible document which we feel will help present the clearest and most accurate information that exists about SEAC, and the information you're about to discover may save your life. So why don't you read this report carefully and thoroughly with an open mind and then make up your own mind for yourself. That's the introduction to the book called Canada's Remarkable SEAC Report, The Unknown Cancer Remedy, published by Richard Thomas. Richard Thomas, and it's published by the Alternative Treatment Information Network, the ATIN. And the address they give is 1244 Ozeta, I guess it's O-Z-E-T-A, Ozeta Terrace, Los Angeles, California, 90069. They've got a phone number here. It's 310-278-6611. Again, that's 310-278-6611. That address again, 1244 Ozeta Terrace, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Ozeta, spelled O-Z-E-T-A. O-Z-E-T-A, Terrace. Now, before we get into the report itself, let me tell you that there are 9 cures to cancer that I know of. And, you know, I'm just a reporter. I'm not a medical doctor, and I'm not an oncologist. I'm not a paid professional here in the medical world. But my job is to research out information and to cut to the quick, and let's see if we can get some facts together. And so I've discovered that there are 9 cures. Easter lily ovum, number 1. Easter lily ovum. SEAC, discovered by Rene Cassie. Indian black salve, that comes from greasewood, from the Wyoming Indians. Wheatgrass, discovered by Ann Wigmore. Barley green, a dried powder. Royal Rife machine, put out by a fellow named Royal Rife. It's a frequency generator. Gerson's coffee enemas, nutritional supplements and toxin elimination, and bloodroot, which is the active ingredient in most of these cancer remedies. Not all, but in most. Bloodroot. Bloodroot is a natural herb which is banned by the Food and Drug Administration. Bloodroot is a poison. Bloodroot taken to excess will kill you, just like arsenic or strychnine or anything else. But in small doses, it is a very, very important toxin to cancer cells. In fact, when it's taken internally, it only attacks cancer cells. It's a very unique herb. It's just one of some 80 herbs created by God and given to us to cure or heal our diseases. Now, these herbs have been known for thousands of years. They've been around. Now, of course, in modern Western industrial societies, herbs and herbology is looked upon as witchcraft. And, of course, those that use herbs and herbology look upon allopathic medicine as being witchcraft. It's a matter of perspective, as the author here has pointed out, that he's not suggesting that thousands of doctors are engaged in a conspiracy to kill you, but that there is, in fact, a regime, a policy that is set by the American Medical Association, the Food and Drug Administration, the Congress, the President of the United States, and indeed by society itself. If you take a look at vaccinations as an illustration, 88% of Americans believe in vaccinations and 12% do not. Is there something that the 12% know that the other 88% don't know? Or is there something that the 88% know that the 12% of lunatic fringe don't know and ought to be awakened to? You know, it's this matter of perspective. And we in the West believe that the majority is always right. After all, we're Democrats here. And if the majority believes something, then the minority must be wrong. It's just the way we view the world. It's our mindset. If the majority believe in vaccination, then the 12% who do not believe that have to be wrong. If the majority of people are Christians, then those who are non-Christians must be wrong. It's just that simple. And it's not just in the West. If the majority of people are Muslims, then everybody else must be wrong. It's a matter of your perspective and where you're geographically located, how you've been raised, and what your mindset is. What have you been instructed and what have you been taught? And then there's a small group of people, not very many. They're called iconoclasts, people who are commonly known as agnostic. Iconoclast isn't necessarily synonymous with agnostic, but people who are agnostic say, well, I don't know, but I'd like to learn. I don't know whether vaccination's good or bad, but I've got an open mind, so tell me your story. Let me listen to it. So for those of you that may be agnostic, and I don't know much about cancer, listen up and let's see if we can learn something. In the Annals of Natural Cancer Remedies, Essiac is in a category by itself. The original developer of Essiac, René Cassie, in defiance of the authorities, successfully treated thousands of terminally ill cancer victims for more than 50 years. And she never charged for her services, and she never tried to make a profit from her remarkable discovery. That alone should give rise to serious interest. If you look today at alternative cancer treatments, the story is a little different. Although the prices for most alternative cancer therapies and treatments are less than those charged by the traditional medical doctors, they are pretty steep. Many individuals and organizations who offer alternative cancer therapies are definitely profiting from this disease. Not so, though, with René Cassie. Indeed, René Cassie was offered huge sums of money by pharmaceutical interests just to divulge the formula, but she always refused. So whether or not her decision was ultimately an intelligent one, we'll have to leave to you to decide. But here's where the discovery began. In 1922, René Cassie was head nurse at the Sisters of Providence Hospital in Haileybury, Ontario, Canada. She was 33 years old. A Catholic from a typical Catholic family of 11 children, bright and extremely dedicated to her profession. One evening, while going about her duties, she noticed a patient, an elderly woman, who had a strange, scarred breast. René Cassie felt unusually compelled to ask this woman what had happened, and what she was to discover determined the future course of René's life for the rest of her life. Now, the patient revealed to René that more than 20 years earlier, she had come from England to join her husband, who was working as a prospector in northern Ontario. Shortly after she arrived, a hardened mass appeared on her left breast. The area where they were camping was inhabited by Ojibwa Indians, and by luck, they befriended an old Indian medicine man. The old medicine man was made aware of her condition, not exhibiting the kind of alarm that most people have when encountering what surely looked like a serious problem. He offered to help heal her. He had a remedy, he said, which was given to his people by the grandfathers, a holy drink that would purify her body and place it back in balance with the Great Spirit. And she and her husband respected the Indian's kind offer, but being from a culture that considered Indian remedies as little more than superstition, they declined his help. The couple instead decided to journey to Toronto, and there their worst fears were confirmed. The woman had cancer, and the breast would have to be removed immediately. Well, it hit them hard, and the woman had recently lost a friend after a radical mastectomy. Plus, They were almost destitute at that time, no money for hospitals or an expensive operation. The woman could not forget the kindness and the certainty in the eyes of the old Indian medicine man. Modern culture aside, she decided, because they didn't have money for the operation, to return and to try this Indian remedy. What he gave her was a pleasant-tasting herbal tea, which she was instructed to drink twice a day until her body was back in harmony with the Great Spirit. The medicine man also taught her how to make the tea on her own. So when Renee encountered the Englishwoman more than 20 years later, her breast was scarred, but certainly not cancerous. Renee asked her for the recipe. I was very interested and wrote down the names of the herbs that she had used, knowing that at that time doctors threw up their hands when cancer was discovered in a patient. My thought was that if I should ever develop cancer, I would use it. 2 years later, Renee had occasion to use the recipe, but not on herself. Her favorite aunt, Marisa, had been diagnosed as having terminal cancer of the stomach and liver. Renee was familiar with the eventual outcome. She had witnessed firsthand the terrible agony of cancer victims, and she was also intimately aware of the advances of modern medical science. Radium therapy, the latest breakthrough, burned and mangled tissue so badly that most patients experienced an agonizingly painful death after being exposed to this type of therapy. So, Renee Cassie asked her aunt's physician, Dr. R.O. Fisher, if she might try the old Indian recipe. Dr. Fisher was skeptical, but admitted that at this late stage, he had nothing better to offer, so he consented. She gathered the herbs and brewed the tea. After 2 months of daily treatments, her aunt got better. Not just better, a lot better. She lived another 20 years. So needless to say, both Renee and Dr. Fisher were very impressed. Renee, who was living with her mother in Toronto, decided along with the now-not-so-skeptical Dr. Fisher to try this herbal brew on other patients who had been diagnosed as having terminal cancer. And when they were treated with the herbal tea, they too showed dramatic improvement. And the word spread. Let me pause here and give you a mid-course reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling site on our website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log, schedule, and archives, and that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements are recommendations that we give. do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are going to reciprocate by endorsing and recommending the Law Hour and Editorial Review. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily 100% endorsed, rather, by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. So for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the book, The ESIAC Report by Richard Thomas. Let me give you another little piece of information. Now, I've had a number of inquiries about conducting a tax and status school down in Austin, Texas. We're in the process of putting one of those together. If you're one of those who have called in the past and said, hey, would you come down here to Austin and put on a school for us, call us for the date and time. And if you haven't, but you are thinking that, well, maybe I might be interested in that, then call us here at the law school for the date and time for the tax and status school in Austin, Texas, or the environs. I don't know if it'll be in downtown Austin, Texas, but somewhere around Austin, somewhere within driving distance. The number to call here is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Well, in the 1920s, as it is today, real medicine was thought to be more effective when it was injected. Well, Rene and Dr. Fisher reasoned that if they got such dramatic results with the old Indian remedy by administering it orally, they might get even better results if they injected it. So the first person to receive an injection was a man from Lyons, New York, who had cancer of the throat and tongue. With Dr. Fisher's assistance, Rene injected the herbal remedy straight into the man's tongue. The immediate reaction was very unsettling. The patient began to shake uncontrollably, his tongue swelling to the point where it had to be flattened with a spatula to allow him the opportunity to breathe. But after 20 minutes, the swelling and the shaking subsided, and the patient, who never received another injection and wasn't about to, reported that the cancer did stop growing, and he was able to enjoy a pleasant life for some time thereafter. Rene and Dr. Fisher were encouraged by the results, but knew that more study should be done on the herbal remedy before they injected their next patient. So they converted Rene's mother's basement on Parkside Drive in Toronto into a laboratory where she and Dr. Fisher began experiments on mice inoculated with human cancer. In Renee's words, it took Dr. Fisher and I about 2 years to find out just what ingredients could be given hypodermically without a reaction, and by elimination we found the ingredients that directly reduced the growth of the cancer. However, I found that the other ingredients, which could not be injected, were necessary to the treatment in order to carry off the destroyed tissue and the infections which were thrown off by the malignancy. So by giving the injection to destroy the mass of malignant cells and then giving the medicine orally to purify the blood, I was able to get the best results. So let me just pause here for a moment and tell you how that works. There's a number of herbs that will kill cancer. This Easter Hilly Ovum is one. Bloodroot is another. And the Indian Black Salve, which the active ingredient, I believe, is greasewood, will also do the same thing. The problem that you run into, and this is where allopathic medicine has fallen down, after you have killed this mass of cancer, which, by the way, chemotherapy will do, and radiation will kill the cancer. Your body has to get rid of it. And so if you kill the cancer too fast, then it plugs up your lymph system, plugs up your liver, plugs up your kidneys, plugs up your colon, and you die. That's your problem. And so allopathic medicine, when they kill the cancer, they kill the tumor. It also kills the patient. And so that's why they tell you, you've got to get to us early in the cancer. The earlier, the better. Well, that makes all the sense in the world. The earlier you get there to the allopathic physician who's going to give you this chemotherapy remedy, then the smaller the cancer is going to be. And this is why allopathic medicine says, they throw up their hands. They say, when you come in here with what they call terminal cancer, this cancer has spread through your body. And you've got cancer in your liver and maybe in your lungs and so on. There's nothing they can do. And that's because you waited too long. You came in too late. See? And that's because if they give you the chemotherapy, they know you're going to die. Now, chemotherapy and radiation work 37% of the time. So, and here in America, we're very conscious of cancer, and so we're very, very careful to, you know, women, you're constantly looking for cancer in their breasts, and the minute they find a little lump, they rush off to the doctor and they cut off their breast. Works like a shot. Works like a shot. Now, I say that there's a fatal flaw in this kind of reasoning, because whatever it was that caused that cancer in that woman's breast hasn't been alleviated. Whatever food she was eating, whatever nutrient she is lacking, whatever this cause of cancer is, and modern medicine tells you very plainly, we don't know what causes cancer. We don't know what causes it. All right. Well, cancer has a number of causes, and primarily it's what you're eating or what you're not eating. What you're eating is toxic. We call that a carcinogen. Or what you're not eating, that's called a nutritional deficiency, is causing your cancer. Causes a number of other symptoms as well. Could be muscular dystrophy or Parkinson's disease. So disease comes from one of two sources. It's either toxins, air pollution, water pollution, chemicals, tobacco, or nutritional deficiencies. You're lacking in zinc or copper, or you're iron deficient or something on that order, and it causes, just like we have with scurvy, you know, you have a vitamin C deficiency, you develop scurvy, you take vitamin C, the scurvy goes away. It's no big mystery. Now, of course, if modern medicine said to you, look, all disease is fairly simple. It's caused by toxins or nutritional deficiencies. You people would say, well, I guess maybe since everybody's in agreement that it's toxins and nutritional deficiencies, I guess maybe I better take supplements. So here's where your diverse opinion comes from. So the alternative medical therapists, the naturopaths and chiropractors and others, they tell you that it's a nutritional deficiency, and the allopaths, they come along and say, no, nutrition has nothing to do with it. And the naturopaths and the DOs, they probably believe what they're telling you. And the allopathic physicians probably believe what they're telling you, that it's not nutritional, and you don't know. And you're not going to take the time, effort, and energy to find out. And so you pick one side or the other, just like flipping a coin. And it comes up tails. Well, I'll go along with the allopathic medical doctors. After all, they're in the majority. And we tend to follow the majority, just like this English woman. You know, she came from England, and she had cancer of the breast. And so when the medicine man, you know, the Indian medicine man came along, she said, well, that's just superstitious nonsense. Surely these Indians can't know anything. Surely these Chinese can't know anything. Surely these Japanese, they can't know what we know. We're smarter than they are. And so she went to Toronto, and she got down to the medical doctor and says, oh, my God, you've got cancer. We've got to cut off your breast. The only thing that saved her life was she didn't have enough money for the operation. If the woman had had medical insurance, you can rest assured she'd have said, cut it off. In America today, if you have cancer and you have medical insurance and you attack, you treat the cancer aggressively. You cut off your breast, you cut out your colon, you have a colostomy, you do whatever needs to be done. The average lifespan is 18 months. Now, if you're poor and you don't have medical insurance, and I had a friend up in Humboldt County, California, he developed cancer. And Richard said, to hell with the medical doctors, I'm not going to the medical doctors. He lived for 6 years, which is the exact average. If you don't do anything, just leave it alone. Just go live your life, smoke cigarettes and drink booze and chase wild women. On average, you'll live 6 years. That's 4.5 years longer than if you aggressively treat it. Although the medical doctors can cure cancer 37% of the time. Now, of course, that's about a third. The other 63% of the time you die. Now, when you get to terminal cancer, when they get to the point where they say, well, there's nothing more we can do to you. My wife was in that boat in 1978. She had cancer. It was all through her body. It was in her liver. It was in her colon. It was in her female organs. And so they just said, well, you're going to die. And so they suggested, though, that she go through the chemotherapy and the radiation and the surgery to keep her alive as long as they possibly could. And they told her, she asked him, said, well, what's this going to cost? And the answer was $100,000 in 1978. And that she would probably live about a year and a half. Now, she didn't have medical insurance. And she did have the $100,000, but she thought, geez, if I take the $100,000 and spend it on the doctors, I'll live for 18 months, but then what's my husband and my children going to do after we've consumed all of our wealth? So she said, well, how long am I going to live if I don't do anything? And the answer was about 6 months. So she said, okay, I've got 6 months to live. I've got cancer all through my body, and there's nothing medical science can do. They could extend my life for about a year if I spend $100,000, but if I don't spend the $100,000, I'm going to die anyway. So her conclusion was, I guess I'm going to die anyway, so I guess what difference does it make whether I die in 6 months or 18 months? Let's save the $100,000 and I'll die in six. So she didn't do anything. She didn't attack it aggressively. Meanwhile, somebody came along and said, did you ever hear of wheatgrass? Wheatgrass. And my wife said, no, never heard of it. Well, a lady by the name of Ann Wigmore discovered that wheatgrass has nutrients in it, nutrients that attack cancer, nutrients that aid your immune system in attacking the cancer. And so Ann Wigmore had this cancer clinic up in Boston, Massachusetts, I believe. And she treated a number of people. My wife had heard about that. So they built a greenhouse out here alongside the house. This greenhouse, for you students, was built for my wife's cancer in 1978. And she started taking wheatgrass. She also did some other things. I'll tell you a little about that as we progress along. But my wife has had cancer for 28 years. She's got cancer today. And she's still here, still alive, still active, still healthy, still doing her thing. She's going to die with cancer. We just hope that she doesn't die from the cancer. But she's had cancer for 28 years. And once you develop cancer, you're going to have cancer for the rest of your life. Once your body develops cancer, it'll always be there. But the good news is there's a way to treat it. I mean, you can sit here and you can treat that cancer with herbs naturally. And there's hundreds, thousands of people all over the world who are living with their cancer and treating it with herbs and diet and supplements and wheatgrass and other nasty things. I mean, that wheatgrass is nasty stuff. I mean, you take this wheat as the grass grows up, you know, and you cut it off. It's kind of like take your lawnmower out in the front yard, cut it, gather up a bunch of it, take it now, stick it in the juicer, juice it, and then drink that nasty stuff. Now, I say it's nasty because of them by itself. You know, I imagine the average cow, you know, I've got Jersey cows out here, they love grass. I'd never cared too much for it myself. Now, that's just one. Then there's barley grain. Barley grain is a little bit different. It comes in a dried powder, but that barley grain is a pretty phenomenal source of nutrients. And some kind of an acid in this barley grain that attacks cancer cells, just like bloodroot does. Doesn't attack the good cells. See, this chemotherapy now just kills anything indiscriminately. Radiation just kills everything everywhere. And it kills so much so fast that your body plugs up, your lymph system plugs up, your liver plugs up, and you die from it. Once the medical doctors get to the point where they can dispose of the dead cells from these tumors, they'll have something. That chemotherapy is not all bad. I mean, it's a concoction of drugs and chemicals over here that kill cells, and it kills cancer cells, and they can direct it right at that cancer cells, and it kills a lot of cancers. And 37% now is nothing to sneer at. I'm not sitting here saying, you know, the medical profession over here is totally incompetent. They can actually cure 37%. It's a little better than a third. Hell of a lot better than they were doing 90 years ago. But you see, in our society here, especially in America, we've got 87,000 chemicals lurking around. You've got a bunch of them underneath your kitchen sink, lady. And you use those chemicals, and those chemicals over there are carcinogenic, a lot of them. Not all of them, but a lot of them are. Especially things like fluoride and other additives that we put in our water, you know, like chlorine. And those are toxic chemicals. And used over a long period of time, they cause disease. Atherosclerosis and arterial sclerosis and cancer and Parkinson's disease and, you know, these various symptoms that we have. Now, the medical authorities were not very impressed. Other doctors, hearing about Renee Cassie's work from Dr. Fisher, began sending Renee their hopeless cases. An 80-year-old man, Jay Smith, showed up with a hideous, hemorrhaging, malignant growth on his face. Within 24 hours, the bleeding had stopped. After several SEAC treatments, the growth began to reduce in size, and the large holes in his chin started to heal. Okay, so the SEAC, the blood root in the SEAC, attacks the cancer cells and kills them. But in a slower fashion so that it doesn't overwhelm your immune system, doesn't overwhelm your lymph system or your liver, and your body slowly dissipates these toxic wastes. And it cures them. And you can have cancer throughout your body. It doesn't make any difference how much is there. An old Indian naturopath down in Pasadena, Texas. This old Indian guy. I was talking to him about that, and I said, now from your perspective and you know, from your people's point of view, how do you view cancer? And he said, it's no big deal. And he said, I can cure anybody with cancer who has not had radiation or chemotherapy. And if they still have 15% of their body energy left. Now, listen to this now. Old Indian doctor. I know you modern people would sneer at this, but this old Indian told me, when I asked him about him and his people and how they treat cancer, I said, is this something that's really scary? He said, no. No big deal. But he said, once you take chemotherapy or radiation, it attacks your immune system and destroys your immune system. The natural healing arts do not attack the immune system. We try to work with the body's immune system. So herbs work with your immune system to strengthen your immune system. Your immune system is the thing, the institution, the instrument that's going to cure your or heal your body. Without it, you're dead. So the modern allopathic medical doctor, there's this bicycle rider, I forgot his name now, but Lance Armstrong, I guess is his name. Lance Armstrong. He had cancer. Young man, strong, and they attacked it with chemotherapy. Now here's a case where this guy's immune system is strong enough, he's young enough yet, that they could kill the cancer. They got it early enough. They killed the cancer. His body could get rid of it. And so he comes out and he says, well, modern medicine is wonderful. They cured my cancer. And it's one of those 37% that cured. Now, there's another 63% that they die. So this old Indian doctor and all of these naturopaths that I've dealt with over the years, when somebody comes to them with cancer, they've already been to the allopathic medical doctor, and they've already destroyed their immune systems with chemotherapy. And now the doctor says, well, there's nothing more we can do to you. And so when that guy comes to the old Indian doctor, he says, well, there's nothing I can do for you either, because now you've destroyed your immune system. If you'd have come here first, I could have cured you. But you went to the medical doctor first, and now there's nothing I can do for you either. So tuck that one away in your heart, children. The medical doctor with cut, burn, and poison is going to destroy your immune system. If it works, and he doesn't destroy your immune system, but he does kill the cancer, and you're one of the 37%, it's going to work like a shot. But if it doesn't, then it destroys your immune system, and you then say, well, now it's hopeless. Now I'll go to the naturopath. The naturopath can't help you. Now, there's the cost involved. The naturopath, he costs less than the medical doctor. He's pricey, but he costs less. And he's got one of, or a combination of, these nine cures. He's going to use Easter Lily Ovum, Essiac, Indian Black Salve, Wheatgrass, Barley Green, or the Frequency Generator, Gerson's Coffee Enemas, Nutritional Supplements, and Toxic Elimination, or Bloodroot, or some combination of those nine. And he will avoid cut, burn, and poison. The allopathic medical doctor will eliminate the nine natural remedies, and he will go straight to cut, burn, and poison. And if the cut, burn, and poison works, you'll be one of the 37%, and if it doesn't work, you will be one of the 63%, but at that point, there's nothing that the naturopath can do for you, because now your immune system's been burned out. In order for these nine cures to work, your immune system has to be in operation. It may be impaired. It may not be working correctly. It may not be up to snub, but it can't be dead. It's got to be there so that it can be revived. So tuck that one away in your heart. We'll be back with more on Renee Cassie and the Essiac story. Remember, the Essiac report was put out by the Alternative Treatment Information Network, ATIN, 1244 Ozeta, O-Z-E-T-A, Ozeta Terrace, Los Angeles, California, 90069. And the phone number is 310-278-6611. Again, that's 310-278-6611. I'm about out of time. Let me give you a final reminder that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course, so until then, thanks for listening, everyone, and good night, friends.